everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today, as you do, when you do. I so appreciate it. And I know you're there. I can feel you. It really makes a difference to know I'm not talking out to nobody, but I know there are many of you out there. I hear from you, and I'm very grateful that we're all in this together, this crazy world that we're living in, making it better for what we get on our plates. Because not only is it about food, and it is all about food and what we put on our plates, but we all know how connected it is to all life on Earth, not just human life, non-animal life, plant life, life that we haven't even been able to perceive or discover yet. There's so many mysteries out there. I wanted to first talk about the Food Revolution Summit, which I discussed a little bit last week. We were in the middle of it, this 9-day extravaganza talking about our food system, just like we do here on It's All About Food. But the difference is it was done in a very concentrated dose with some really wonderful people, John and Ocean Robbins as the hosts of this program. John, of course, who is a wonderful leader and got many of us on this path to plant-based eating, vegan eating, and thinking about the connection between food with our health, with the environment, with the treatment of animals. And the summit was really amazing. It's over now. It ended on Sunday. And for those of you who missed it, or for those of you who only were able to catch a little bit of it, you do have the opportunity to hear it all. It's not free anymore, but you can purchase the empowerment package. Excuse me. And if you have missed it and you're curious about it, this is a great concentrated all-in-one place package with interviews with some amazing people. I recommend it. And there are bonuses that you get if you get the empowerment package. If you're interested just taking a look at it, you can go to my website, responsiveeatingandliving.com. On the right, there's a link to the Food Revolution Summit empowerment package. You can check that out. Now, as I mentioned last week, there was a bit of confusion because not all of the speakers were preaching the same gospel. And that left a lot of people with questions and concerns, and I tried to answer them as best I could on the forum that we had for the Food Revolution Network. But still, there are a lot of open issues, and I tried to address that last week. I wanted to cover some other questions that came up from the summit, and one of them had to do with the recipes that I was providing. I gave one new recipe each day of the summit, and in two recipes, I think, where the vegetables were sautéed or there was a need for some sort of oil, I recommended using organic canola oil. And the recipe said canola oil, but there's a little asterisk that recommended using non-GMO varieties. And we recommend organic canola oil. Now, that got a lot of comments, and some of them were not very nice. People were like up in arms. They couldn't believe we were recommending using canola oil. And you may have heard all of the horrible things about canola oil on the internet. Some of it isn't true, and the things that may not be good about canola oil are related to the GMO version. And basic organic canola oil, the kind that was around before it became genetically modified and not organic varieties, is in general for an oil, an okay oil to use. The thing that people get confused about is that organic canola oil, the original canola oil that was created in the early 70s is a variety of rapeseed that was crossbred. It was not done in methods that would require it to be related to GMO. It was not genetically altered at the DNA level. It's been crossbred, as farmers have been doing for as long as I know humanity's been around. We've been trying to improve plants. And there was an improvement made on the rapeseed varieties to reduce the amount of uric acid in it, which was found to cause problems. Rapeseed oil was used quite a bit for centuries in Europe and India, China and Japan. And then this uric acid was discovered and found to be problematic. And also cooking at high temperatures with this particular unrefined rapeseed oil is related to increased risk of lung cancer, because this high temperature oil can give off chemicals that cause mutations in cells. And so this earlier version, the rapeseed oil, is not a healthy oil, but the crossbred version, canola oil, that came out in the early 70s, is a relatively good oil. And Dr. Dean Ornish, and you're probably familiar with him, he's done a lot of great research on cardiovascular disease and more recently prostate cancer, and he's another one of the people in the forefront of promoting a plant-based diet because of its great characteristics in reducing risk of heart disease, and then later in reducing the risk of prostate cancer, or at least turning the symptoms of prostate cancer around. He pointed out in an article in Reader's Digest, where he pointed out that canola oil has been used much more than olive oil in the Mediterranean. And this may be one of the reasons why there's benefits to the Mediterranean diet. Maybe it's not olive oil, maybe it's canola oil. And there was a study done also showing the benefits of canola oil over olive oil. And canola oil is more stable for cooking than olive oil or hemp or flaxseed. So when we cook and when we put recipes out that require a little oil, we recommend organic canola oil. What surprises me, though, is when people make comments. I don't know what it is since the internet has come about it, or maybe it's part of the evolution of our generations, but people are not polite. They'll just say the nastiest things and act as if they know everything. And people were, you know, just saying, I couldn't believe that there were canola oil in the recipes, and I can't believe it. What are you people doing? And don't you know any better? And then we would try and inform people where we were coming from and why we did what we did. So I'm at peace with using organic canola oil. We've talked about oil a lot on this program. And again, I don't think oil is a nutritious food per se. It's something that should be used very sparingly. I prefer to get my fats from whole foods, raw nuts and seeds, avocado and coconut, and whenever I can eliminate oil from a recipe, I do so. I'm even trying to go back to a lot of the recipes we have at responsibleeatingandliving.com, the baked goods recipes, and whenever I can, I've gone from using like a vegan butter, like Earth Balance, trying to substitute them with oils, and then going and substituting that with like a nut butter instead, and making the recipes always delicious, but more healthful whenever possible. So when I have a chance to revisit recipes, I like to do that. The next thing was the Healthy World Burger. I think I mentioned it last week, so I came up with these 9 recipes, and the one recipe that I am the most excited about is our Healthy World Burger. And I posted it at responsibleeatingandliving.com a few days ago. This is, drum roll please, this is the best veggie burger I've ever had. The best. And it's good for you. It's delicious, nutritious. It's not made with any isolated soy proteins like the kind of veggie burgers you can find in the store. Also, unlike the kind of veggie burgers you find in the store, it's not mushy, it's soft. It has a nice chew. And what I like about it is a lot of things. But one of the things is we use some ancient grains in the recipe, black rice, red rice, and turanicum. And you can use brown rice if you have a gluten intolerance, because turanicum is an earlier ancient wheat variety, and it has gluten in it. But this is an incredible recipe. You can find it at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I don't think it's very difficult to make, and I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. And speaking of letting me know what you think, the lines are open. You can call in at any time to this program, 1-888-874-4888, and ask any question you like. If you were listening to the Food Revolution Summit last week and you had some questions that weren't answered, hey, this might be a good time to ask me, and I will do my very best to get you an answer. Or you can email me at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. So we're here at 1-888-874-4888. You know, there's this restaurant that I love in my neighborhood. It's called Green Zenfity. I may have spoken about it before. I live in Queens, New York, and Queens is a really fascinating place. There are a gazillion languages spoken in Queens. I'm not sure if there are more languages spoken here than anywhere else, but I heard at one time that was true. I'm not sure if it's still true. And as a result, there are many restaurants with lots of ethnic cuisines all over the place. We don't have a lot of vegan restaurants, though. There are a few, but Manhattan really wins out in that department. And for a long time, I was wanting something convenient in my neighborhood. And we had a restaurant come around a couple of years ago called Simple Veggie, which I talked about a lot. We even did a little film about Simple Veggie. It was great. But the owner, for one reason or another, didn't want to stick with it. And Green Zenfity moved in. And wow, I'm so happy with Green Zenfity. It's really a lovely, lovely restaurant. And we were there a few days ago. We've been working really hard. Okay, we work hard all the time, but we've been working extra hard. And we had pushed and did a lot of cooking and recipe photography like a week or two ago. And as a result, we've kind of not been doing as much cooking. Just kind of taking it easy. And as a result, we've been at Green Zenfity a little more often than normal, a few times a week rather than, you know, once or twice a month. I discovered they have some fresh pressed juices there. You know, I'm big on green juice and I like to have a green juice every day. I hadn't had my green juice, and they have a red cabbage juice with lemon on their menu, and I had it. Really loved it. It was a really nice change from my green juice. But red cabbage is also a potent anti-cancer food loaded with all kinds of good things. And I thought, okay, I can have this in place of my green juice. You might try it. Just juicing red cabbage, adding a little lemon. Lovely, lovely drink. It's not bitter. It has a little sweetness. I think the red coloring is, like some kind of carotenoid or something, adds a sweetness to the juice. Try it out. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, I want to sing my praises to the humble chickpea, the chickpea, which is also known as a garbanzo bean. In French, we used to call it, or they still call it, the pois chiche, chickpea. And in Middle East, it is known as hummus. hummus with that sound. Hummus, and we call, and that's where we've gotten hummus from, the chickpea spread that is traditionally made with olive oil, lemon juice, sesame, tahini butter, and salt. We call it hummus, but really hummus means chickpeas. All right. I want to sing the praises of chickpeas. So I just mentioned hummus, and the lovely thing about hummus is that for vegetarians and vegans, it's today seems to be a guaranteed dish that you can find at parties and events when you're concerned about if there'll be anything to eat. We always like to joke and say, at least there will be hummus. It may not be the best hummus. Unfortunately, today it's usually like purchased from that company Sabra, which I don't recommend ever, because Sabra, not only do they not use olive oil, they use soybean oil, and it's likely that that soybean oil is genetically modified. It is not a traditional hummus, and it's, if you read the ingredients, you will see they are not very good. Hummus should be made with chickpeas, and even if you get a bean spread made with another bean, that's fine, but it shouldn't be made with soybean oil, especially not genetically modified. And the store-bought brands tend to have preservatives, too much salt, and they take a really good, delicious, healthy food and make it not so. That's the beginning of chickpeas. But there's more amazing things about chickpeas. And we're starting to learn more about chickpeas. So one of the things I've talked about a lot is chickpea flour. If you grind up the dry chickpea into a flour, it becomes this miracle flour that is easy to use. We make crepes from chickpea flour. You can find responsibilityandliving.com, all of our chickpea crepes. And I'll say crepe slash omelet because we use it also for omelet-like recipes. You just mix it with the water and you put it in an oiled frying pan. And we like to use organic canola oil, by the way, when we oil our pans. It makes the easiest crepe or pancake. You can make it a little thicker by adding different things to it, vegetables and onions, and make wonderful omelets. Add some vegan cheese to it or cashew cream or something, and it's just rich and luscious. Chickpea flour is amazing. We have some frittata recipes, and chickpea flour is often in our batter bases because it nicely holds things together in a way like eggs do. And I keep thinking about how different this world would have been if we had started with the chickpea as the base of many foods instead of an egg. And now you may have heard about aquafaba. Aquafaba. Aquafaba is the name given to the liquid that chickpeas are sitting in. So when you soak and cook chickpeas to make them soft and you get them in a can or you cook them yourself, the water that is there with the chickpeas that thickens and is a little slimy actually, you can whip it like egg whites and it becomes meringue. And there's a huge movement. There's a Facebook page for aquafaba. There's all this excitement around it. People are doing things with this chickpea liquid that has never been done before. And what they're doing is replacing egg whites. This is phenomenal. Now, I've never been a fan of meringue or meringue-like desserts, but there are many recipes out there that call for them. And now people are making them with this aquafaba. And it's fabulous. The reason why I mention it is because the New York Times just featured an article about aquafaba and the guy that got it started and the frenzy that's all around it. And now even Sir Kensington, the company that makes a lot of condiments, they've now jumped on the bandwagon of vegan mayonnaise products. We've talked a lot about vegan mayonnaise over the last few years, and they now have one that they're offering to the public, and it contains aquafaba. And that's how they got their vegan mayonnaise to do whatever it was they wanted it to do and have the flavor that they wanted it to have. Aquafaba. So it's just incredible how we have chickpea flour that can make these wonderful crepes without eggs and frittatas without eggs. And now we have aquafaba. And people are starting to use it not only to make meringue products, but macaroons, and are using it in baked goods to make a softer, moister crumb. It's spectacular. And here is something, I love it, because it was a waste product. People were throwing it away. In fact, I was reading in that New York Times article, there's a company that makes hummus in upstate New York. And they were indeed throwing away their chickpea water, the aquafaba. And now they have a buyer for it. Sir Kensington is connected with them to make their vegan mayo with aquafaba. So there is a really lovely, happy ending or happy beginning with this spectacular product. I don't know. Does anybody have a problem with chickpeas? Are there any chickpea allergies? I'm sure some people can't eat chickpeas, but I think for the most part, it is a food that has fed people for a very long time. It's very, very popular in the Middle East. Even just eating chickpeas in things, chickpea in soups and chickpea in stews, put chickpeas on salads. They're very satisfying. They're very nutritious. This is, I think, my new favorite in terms of food. You know, we used to talk about the incredible edible egg, that it was a complete whatever. and now I think it's chickpeas. Chickpeas should take that position because it's very nutritious and you can do so many amazing things with it. That's my praise for the simple chickpea. Thank you for listening. Then the last thing I wanted to mention, sing praises for, I think I mentioned last week, I've got my new delivery of dried mushrooms from Fungus Among Us. Have you tried them? This is the best way, I think, to get your mushrooms. Now, mushrooms, back, I remember a long time ago, everybody thought there's nothing nutritious about mushrooms. And yet we have learned that mushrooms are a nutritional powerhouse with anti-cancer fighting properties. I like to call mushrooms natural chemotherapy with no bad side effects. And we should have mushrooms every day. And the question is, how can you eat mushrooms every day deliciously? And I buy organic dried mushrooms. I get them from Fungus Among Us. It's really economical because you can get these mushrooms that you don't normally see in the stores all the time. And you can get them and have them all the time dried. And then when you're ready, you just rehydrate them. And I just can't get enough of them. So we've been, for example, having mashed potatoes the last couple of nights. And who doesn't love mashed potatoes? And I just rehydrate these mushrooms. And I've got this great mushroom topping for the top of my mashed potatoes. And I'm very, very happy. Yes, I am. And if you go to What Vegans Eat, which is our daily blog, talking about what we've been eating every day, you'll see how I've been using these mushrooms. They're great. When I can't think of what to make or what to do, and I have a little hunger, I make this really quick broth, hot water, on top of the dried mushrooms. I might add a little miso stirred into it, and there is a nutritious, really quick, wonderful soup. It kind of puts a stop in my hunger until I'm ready to sit down and have a really nice meal. So let's take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about a very popular food called bacon. We'll be right back. everybody. We are back. And how are you doing today? It's May. It's May, the lovely, lovely month of May. And I'm waiting here in New York for some warm weather to hit. But right now, it's still hanging pretty cool. But I know I should enjoy this weather because soon it's going to be hot and humid, right? And we'll be complaining about that. Okay, so we're going to have some fun now because we're going to be talking about delicious food that people love to eat and all of the ramifications around it and why I am so excited about the 21st century, because it's all about acknowledging and embracing the foods people love and figuring out how to make them with plant ingredients, because many of the foods that people love come from animals, and many of us are concerned about the treatment of animals. And a long time ago, I got into this scene because I didn't think we should be killing any sentient beings. And I stopped eating animals and then learned about how eating animals is bad for health and bad for the environment. And the 20th century now seems to be all about coming up with foods, traditional foods that people love to eat, and removing the animal from it and replacing it with plants. Now, some of that's done with some serious processing and manipulation using artificial means, artificial synthetic ingredients along with the plant ingredients to get a certain texture, a certain taste. And then other times it's just with simple natural ingredients that we can get a similar feeling, flavor, mouthfeel to replace foods that we love. And we've talked about the plant milks and the plant-based cheeses and the meat analogs. We talked about vegan mayonnaise. And as I was mentioning before, the egg products that we're learning how to replace so we don't have to use the egg. Well, how about bacon? And that's what we're going to be talking about now with Leilana Tumunes, who has a new cookbook out called Baconish. She is the author of the blog Vegan Good Things, and her writing and photography have appeared in Leica and Veg News magazines. She's a longtime vegan and is dedicated to creating recipes that are satisfying enough to please anyone, vegan, vegetarian, flexitarian, or hardcore carnivore alike. And she's active in the New York City vegan community, lives in Long Island City with her husband and two children who are all vegan. Welcome to It's All About Food, Leilana.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So before we get into your wonderful cookbook and your wonderful recipes, let's talk a little bit about you, which is, I read a little bit about you in your introduction.
Sure.
I always like to know what everybody's story is. So what was your motivation behind becoming vegan?
For going vegan in the first place. Well, I actually married a vegan man. He had been vegan for a very, very long time. You know, when we got married, he had already been vegan for probably 20 years at that point. And, you know, when we got married, I still ate dairy. I was and I ate fish and seafood. So I wasn't eating all kinds of meat, but I definitely was not vegan at that point. And, you know, the great thing about him was that he was never preachy or pushy about it. He was just a great example of what, you know, a vegan could be. He was super healthy, had plenty of energy, you know, looked much younger than his years. And, you know, and I'm the only one who cooks in the household. So, you know, I would only cook vegan at home just to make things easier. But, you know, when we would go out, I would still, you know, have cheese or fish or some things once in a while. And really just sort of slowly, without really meaning to, I started eating more and more vegan. And I started noticing that the fewer animal products I ate, the better I felt. And, you know, health issues that I'd had really as long as I could remember, my whole life long, started to disappear. And it was really clearly linked to the change in my diet. And so that started happening. And then, you know, as I read more and more and learned more and more about being vegan and about, you know, cutting out those last few animal products that I was still, you know, eating at the time. You know, I started to come to it on my own, and I really felt like it was my decision in the end that I came to the decision on my own. And really the last step was one night we watched the movie Earthlings. I don't know if you've seen it.
Sure.
It's a pretty intense, powerful film. And after I watched Earthlings, that was it. I said, you know, not only am I not eating any more animal products, but that's when I stopped buying, you know, I stopped wearing leather. I stopped buying, you know, any animal products, even in my clothing and accessories. And it was from that point on that I really declared myself vegan.
I appreciate you telling us this story. And what I love about it is it's not a unique story. It's something that I think resonates with all humans, that when we are in a safe place and we're shown what life can be like, and when we discover eating plant foods and eliminating animal foods, when we just feel like we've never felt before, we feel right. better, all the problems go away. It's an incredible discovery. It's a discovery that is available for everyone.
Right.
I think the best, I love your husband for this, because the best way to share this message is to share it with someone you love, and especially someone you're in a relationship with. That's the best way to create new vegans, other than burying them yourself.
Right. Well, we made two more vegans as well. So,
so thank you, and thank him for that.
Well,
now, this thing that's going on with bacon, and I mean bacon from pigs, it's, I don't understand it. It's crazy, but we see a lot of it going on with social media. These people that are just obsessed with bacon and professing their obsession with bacon, and they don't seem to be affected at all by the cruelty connected to it. How right. do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, people are really into bacon, and it's weird to me because I mean, when I remember eating bacon sometimes growing up. I mean, we would have bacon once in a while, but it wasn't a thing. Like, it's a thing now where people are so into bacon, you know, and it's this whole sort of cultural mania around bacon. And I mean, I understand it tastes good. I mean, there are actual reasons why, you know, animal-based bacon tastes good. It's, you know, it has to do with the combinations, like all the flavor molecules and how they combine. And I'm not versed enough in like all the scientific reasons, but it does taste good. It has all of the umami savory flavors that hit all the right spots on your taste buds. So I get it. It tastes good. But, you know, when you think about all the other, you know, things that surround animal-based bacon, the cruelty, how terrible it is for your health, how the World Health Organization has declared that it is undeniably linked to more than one type of cancer, you know, and the environmental destruction, it just seems like, is, you know, just because something tastes good, is it really worth all of that? Is it worth all of the other things that go with it? And to me, I mean, obviously the answer is no.
No, especially when, as you've demonstrated in this very lovely cookbook, how we can get, I think what's most appealing about bacon is the sweet, salty, smoky, fatty, whatever it is, umami flavors that make it so appealing. And we can do that with so many different foods. And I think here's what I want. And your book is the beginning of it. Not only bacon-ish, but the word bacon should change, should evolve, and not mean from pigs. It should mean foods that have these flavors, fat, salt, sweet, smoky, and those should all be the new bacon.
Absolutely. I'm so with you on that because, I mean, even people who eat, you know, pig-based bacon, it's not, you know, when they're craving bacon, it's not that they just relish the fact of having a dead pig on their plate. You know, it's all of those flavors that you just described. It's the smoky, the salty, the savory, the crispy, crunchy, you know, all of those flavors, those combinations, that's what bacon is. That's what comes to mind when you hear the word bacon. And so I wanted to really show people that you can capture those flavors. You can still have all of those delicious bacony flavors, but you can do those. You can make those with plant-based ingredients, and it's so much better for you. And so when you say the word bacon, that's what I want you to come to mind. I want it to mean, you know, all of those flavors, the smoky and the savory and the sweet and salty, but with all of these new possibilities that we have, you know, all these new ways of making bacon with vegetable-based ingredients.
And it's yummy. Okay,
it is.
Now we have to make a disclaimer here, okay? This is not the healthiest eating.
Well, I mentioned in the beginning, it's sort of like, you know, I have two kids. We watch Sesame Street sometimes, and Cookie Monster says, like, you know, cookies are sometimes food. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even though vegan bacon is far healthier than animal-based bacon, I'm not claiming that this is health food per se. It's still a sometimes food. I don't expect you to eat the entire batch of bacon in one sitting. You know, it's
even though without, you want to, and you probably will,
right? At least without, you know, drinking lots of water with it. But you know, it is totally cholesterol free because it's vegan. You know, I would say lower in fat. There's still a sodium issue, but you know, you just have to everything in moderation.
Yeah, they're probably. I think in a lot of your recipes, there's a lot of good nutrition, especially from the tempeh and the tofu. Sure. For those people who aren't gluten intolerant, seitan is a great source of protein. There's a lot of goodness. But, you know, it's a funny thing in this food world. When we're promoting something, I was talking about this earlier, when people make comments to things that you put out, there are many people that get angry so quickly. And have so many negative things to say about something, we have to be careful all the time. Oh, you know, you're putting out this vegan recipe, but it has this and it has that. It's not really healthy,
right? Well, I would like to just remind people it's a cookbook about bacon. So, yes, it is vegan bacon and it's better for you, but you're still picking up a cookbook about bacon, which means that you're probably not opposed to a little bit of indulgence, right? Mm-hmm. So,
no, I think this is great. And, you know, I just always like to make these disclaimers.
Yes.
Oh, for those that need to hear them. But there's some wonderful, wonderful recipes in here.
Thank you.
And to satisfy all kinds of cravings. So, for those that are curious, let's talk about how many ways you can make bacon without the animal.
Well, I have, let's see, I think it's 10 or 11 different ways of making the actual bacons. And, you know, the bases of those are seitan and tofu and tempeh, coconut eggplant, a couple different mushroom bacons, carrots, and even roasted chickpeas. And I have a recipe for some the baconish bits, the little bacon bits that are great to sprinkle on everything. And I even have a few bonus recipes that are not bacon, but they're pig friendly, like a seitan ham, the pineapple glazed seitan ham, and a spicy chorizo, and a couple other goodies.
Yes, and I have to include these things because it's my show. I can say whatever I want, but that's what I love about this show. is I have this spiritual thing. I don't know how else to explain it, but many, many years ago, I've been vegan for 28 years and vegetarian longer. And I was in a hotel at one of these basic buffet hotel breakfasts, nothing amazing. There were a handful of chafing dishes out, covered. And I remember wondering what was in the chafing dishes. Usually there's eggs, potatoes in another, and in another one there's typically bacon.
Right.
Without opening them, I passed by them, and I could hear the screams of pigs going to slaughter. And it's a very powerful memory that I have carried with me. It's something that I always have to kind of cork or stop because it brings up tremendous emotion of what's going on in the cruelty in the world. But that's what I hear those things when I smell bacon.
Right, sure.
Okay, so let's please eliminate the animal from the bacon and rejoice from all the wonderful bacons that we can make, and you're doing that here. We like to make a lot of tempeh bacon here at home, but I have to confess that I have not made coconut bacon, which, I mean, how many thousands of people have been raving to you about your coconut bacon?
It's the coconut bacon. You have to make it. It's the one recipe, you know, in my book that it's dearest to my heart. I love the coconut bacon so much. And it really, you know, it was really the recipe that kind of started the whole idea for this book in the first place. And it's, you know, the coconut bacon is just so, it's such a perfect vegan bacon because it absorbs the marinade so well that, you know, the marinade's like tamari or soy sauce if you want, and a little bit of maple syrup and some liquid smoke. There's so much flavor packed into those little flakes. And then the really genius part of the coconut is that coconut has that natural fattiness to it.
Mm-hmm. And so a natural sweet fattiness.
Totally. It's so perfect. And it crisps up so well in the oven. So it's like crispy and kind of fatty, chewy at the same time with all those good flavors in it. It's just the best. Just make the coconut bacon. Make yourself a simple BLT, just some good bread, tomato, lettuce, and some, you know, veggies or just mayo, whatever you prefer. And it's the best BLT ever.
So I also have not made any kind of mushroom bacon, and you have a king trumpet mushroom bacon and a shiitake mushroom. I'm thinking that the mushroom bacon is probably another really good one because of the natural texture that it comes with, that chew.
It's
how it can make a really great bacon.
Yes, exactly. The texture is fantastic. And I love the mushroom bacons also. They're perfect for, you know, for people who are just, you know, beginning or, you know, just making their first vegan bacon recipes because they're so easy to make. They're so easy to work with. And because mushrooms are packed full of the umami flavors already, they take very little to transform them into good little baconish morsels, you know, just a little bit.
Baconish morsels.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to add a whole lot to them. So they're really great, really easy, and super delicious too.
Okay. Earlier in the program, I was singing my praise of chickpeas. I don't know if you caught the New York Times article that was talking about aquafaba.
Right, yes, I saw that.
And I think your cookbook is the first one that I've thumbed through that mentions aquafaba and uses it. So, yay to you.
Yes, I think. I mean, it's the first cookbook that I personally know of that really features a lot of aquafaba recipes. And then, as you probably know, there's a whole book, a whole cookbook for our aquafaba recipes coming out this fall that's going to be really, really amazing. But yes, I use it in a lot of my recipes. It's my egg replacer of choice and all the of the baked goods. And I even use it in the ice cream recipes.
I saw that.
Yes.
Fascinating.
It's a really miraculous ingredient.
It is. And now, for those of you who have a short-term memory, I was talking about it in the first part of the program, and aquafaba is the water that comes out of the can when you get a can of chickpeas, or if you cook it yourself, it's that thick water that is associated with the cooked chickpeas, and it can be whipped into a miraculous frenzy like egg whites.
Yes.
I'm just thinking that if there was any kind of planned purpose for planet Earth and all life on Earth, I think the chickpeas are really here to do an incredible amount of things that we are just beginning to scratch the surface of. So I was talking earlier about the aquafaba and also talking about the chickpea flour, and you have your omelet recipes in here too.
Yes.
Aren't chickpeas like the most amazing thing?
They are. They're so versatile. They can be used in so many different ways. I mean, the chickpea flour I know is used a lot in Indian cooking, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice. You know, it has a sort of a natural, almost eggy kind mm-hmm. of flavor to it. And it, you know, it thickens well. It's really a neat ingredient that I'd like to start using more of. But yes, I use it in my omelet recipe, actually.
Right. Yeah, we're using it more and more. And I guess I have to start. I got to take the aquafaba plunge.
You do. It's so easy. And, you know, use the aquafaba and then make chickpea bacon with the chickpeas.
No waste. Yeah. I'm wondering, though, now I'm just kind of being spontaneous here. People talk about rinsing beans when you cook beans because the water itself can have some of those proteins that give us gas.
Right.
And has anybody talked about gas from aquafaba?
I do not know. Honestly, I mean, I've used aquafaba in a lot of different ways. Like I told you, even in ice creams and, making meringues. I haven't noticed any difference, any extra activity
doing that.
But, you know, the Facebook page, if there has been any discussion about that in aquafaba, it will certainly be on their Facebook page.
Right, I haven't seen it. I just was just thinking about that right now, and I shared it with everyone. yes, okay. So I'm just doing a quick last thumb through here, see what pops out that I want to mention. Everything looks really lovely. Elvis cupcakes, for example.
Elvis makes a few appearances in the book, his peanut butter, banana, and bacon combo.
And do you have a special affinity for Elvis?
I mean, honestly, not so much for Elvis himself. I mean, I like Elvis, but it's really more that I also love peanut butter, bacon, and bananas together.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, peanut butter, you know, I don't know about you. I grew up eating peanut butter and banana sandwiches.
Oh, I eat them all the time.
Totally. And, you know, when you add just that little salty, crispy element mm-hmm. with the bacon or the, you know, any kind of vegan bacon, like coconut bacon especially, it's just so perfect together.
Okay, let's briefly talk about having two vegan children. Now, they're not teenagers yet, and we have to check back with you later on that.
Sure, please do.
But how are they with the food that you give them?
My son is 4, my daughter is 2. They are both in the super picky phases right now. The thing about vegan kids is that they are just as picky and as vegetable averse as other kids. Mm-hmm. So they don't magically eat more vegetables than other kids.
Right.
It can be challenging, but I think in probably the same way that all parents are challenged with picky, preschoolers. They love, their favorite is mac and cheese, of course. They love my mac and cheese, but they love it even more when I get the Amy's frozen mac and cheese.
Oh, wow. What is it about packaged food that kids
love? I don't know. It's their favorite thing. My son especially is really, really difficult right now with the vegetables. So we rely a lot on smoothies, like green smoothies. Fortunately he'll drink smoothies, so we put plenty of spinach or greens into that, and he'll drink it. He acts like I'm trying to poison him if I put it on his plate. We eat a lot of tofu, a lot of rice and pasta, and I try to sneak as many vegetables in, as I can. That way. But they love fruit, snacking on fruit.
Yeah, kids love fruit.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It's not without its challenges for sure, but they're super healthy and happy and thriving, and I've never doubted that, being vegan, raising them vegan is the right decision.
Mm, I love to hear that. Now, you live in Long Island City, which isn't far from me in Florida.
Yes.
And I was talking earlier about Queens and how it's really an incredible place for all kinds of ethnic cuisine.
Yes.
I don't know if you've been to the one in my neighborhood, Green Zenfony, which is in Rego Park.
No.
A favorite.
Yeah, I've got to write that down so I remember to go. We just moved. We only moved from Brooklyn. It wasn't that far, but we just moved to Long Island City in December. So I really have to check out all the, Queens vegan spots.
Yeah, Astoria's got a few. Does Long Island City have anything vegan?
No, it really does not. There are a couple places where you can get vegan options, but it's not great for vegan restaurants, I have to say. We were very spoiled in Brooklyn.
You'll have to open one.
A couple people have mentioned that to me. Somebody needs to open one over here for sure. Like, can't we get the Blossom or the Terry people over here?
Yes, I think it's time.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, Lilana, thank you so much for joining me and for writing Bacon-ish. This is
thank you so much,
great book.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Thank you for joining me, and take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have just 2 minutes left, and I wanted to take a moment. If you've been to responsibilityandliving.com, you may have noticed on the homepage that there's a post saying goodbye to Broccoli Rob. Broccoli Rob was Robert Poe, a lovely man, a great musician. I interviewed him on this program 3 years ago, and he passed away on Thursday. And he unfortunately had a very aggressive stomach cancer, and he tried really, really hard to beat it, and he wasn't successful, unfortunately, and we're all very sad to see him go. I invite you to read my brief post and listen to the interview that I had with him a few years ago. Keep his voice alive. He has a website, robertpoemusic.com, and you can hear some of his wonderful songs and his very rich, lovely, lovely baritone voice. So before we go, I want to play the song that he played in the Progressive Radio Network studio about eating greens, and it's called Around for You. So I'm going to sign off wishing you a very delicious week and listen to Robert Poe's Around for You.
I'm eating my greens, and no more candy in between, 'cause you're sweet enough, it's true. I'm getting strong, I want to live real long, I want to be around for you. Well, you're my reason for this good eating, and working out every day. Nature's concoctions will rid my toxins. Baby, I changed my way. I'm eating my greens and getting hard and lean. It's something everybody should do. I want to be strong. Yes, I want to live real long. I want to be around for you. I want to be around for you. Yes, I want to be around for you.